It's out of here! Home run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out. It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to Continued Success, the part of the Good Fight podcast family you have most currently listened to. I am Phillies writer Justin Clue, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin. How are you?
I'm excited because we so rarely record this podcast when breaking news is happening, but I think we're learning in this offseason that the Phillies will only be making moves when we are recording this podcast. So if anything, this podcast is more essential than ever to any Phillies fan, this podcast as well as Hitting Season and the Dirty Inning. So if you want to see the Phillies make some moves this season, tune into this podcast because apparently that's all they're waiting for to pull the trigger on a few things. Last time it was the Gene Segura deal started happening while we were recording Hitting Season. And as Liz and I started recording tonight, the Phillies traded Luis Garcia to the Angels for reliever Jose Alvarez, which
goodbye.
I gotta tell you, is bye-bye certainly then. A trade. Experts are agreeing that it was a player traded for another.
They are not the same person. They are different people.
They've both played for the teams they're coming from for five of the last five seasons in, I think, pretty much the same role. Alvarez has finished a lot more games than Garcia, so he must come in a later juncture, more crucial juncture than Garcia has been trusted the past couple of years. And Alvarez's ERA and just general statistics have improved while staying in the same sort of bracket innings-wise. So, I mean, I got to tell you, Liz, on paper, I'm no statistical analyst, 10 o'clock, but I will say that on paper, this really looks like another trade where the Phillies got rid of a beleaguered reliever who was out of options and replaced it with an effective pitcher who is also a lefty, giving them a second lefty acquired this year after James Pezos from the Mariners. So I don't know. Is this once again, we're shooting from the hip here, a trade that is only good for the Phillies and nothing else?
I mean, we don't know what's going to happen to Jose once he sets foot on the mound.
Sure.
I'm thinking to myself, he seems good now. How will the Phillies ruin it? Mm-hmm. Happened. We've seen this happen. I'm like going through his game logs. I'm like, there has to be a period where he sucks super bad. And he had like 1 month where his ERA was over 3. And it was July.
Yeah.
And I think for the rest of it, he was very good. I'm frightened by this, but...
He didn't get a lot of exposure. I believe in July, he only got 7 innings of work anyway. Mm-hmm. So I haven't looked into it too much. Maybe there was an injury of some kind. I'm not sure, but obviously.
Oh, he was worse in June. June, it was a 4.15 ERA. This is literally the simplest,
yes,
the simplest analysis you could do. So.
Oh, I leave the in more in-depth statistical analysis to the people at the Good Fight who are much smarter than me. I am purely a surface level statistic kind of guy.
Oh, like, gosh, yeah.
Try this one on for size, Liz. At home, Alvarez had an ERA of almost 3.5, but away his ERA was under 2. So, you know, that's the same amount of innings just about. So I guess the Phillies must have acquired him for his ability to get players out at the stadium that is not his home stadium. And I think we can draw a lot of conclusions from that. I don't think it was about ejecting Luis Garcia from the bullpen at all, who in 3 of his 6 seasons with the Phillies finished with an ERA over 6. So,
oh my God. Wow, they kept him for so long and he was so bad. They loved him so much. Like every year I'd be like, this is it. This is the year that he's going to do it 2 years in a row and it's going to be great. Or, you know, he'll find whatever it is that he lost And he'll be the guy that the Phillies continue to tell us that he is already. We just don't see it. And God, this was a long time coming. I mean, good luck to him, but also goodbye.
Yeah.
Seeing him come out of the bullpen, I started to have, you know, flashbacks of, you know, all sorts of bad innings before. That's an idea. Let's do a dirty inning where we go through some of Luis Garcia's worst innings. We won't have to look hard.
Oh, damn. Yeah. Let me take one look at Luis Garcia's game logs and get back to you on that. No, he certainly could throw very hard and very inaccurately. And yes, from a baseball fan's perspective, I think we can all agree that, at this point, Luis Garcia, when you say he's out of options, we do, of course, mean, you know, contractually. But I think in a way, in general, we're just sort of out of options with Luis Garcia. What else was he going to be? You know, it was just time for a reliever like him to get that classic change of scenery. You know, have like two really great months to make everyone regret the trade. And like, he'll show up as like an integral part of some wild card team's bullpen right before they get bounced out of the playoffs. So yeah, no, I think in general, I think it looks like a pretty solid deal. Of course, this is, you know, quite reactionary, but I'm looking at the numbers, another win for the Phillies, and you know, they haven't made their big deal yet, but the deals they've made, I gotta tell you, I've been pretty happy with so far.
Yeah. I mean, the Angels probably see a reclamation project because, I mean, 2017, he is pretty decent, you know, 2.65 ERA. Where are the strikeouts? I remember how to read a baseball reference page. I do. Like 60 strikeouts over 71 innings. That's not as much as you'd want, but, you know, I mean, he could have been worse, and he, you know, kept guys off base at a decent clip in 2017, so he could be useful for the Angels, who don't really know what they're doing.
Sure. And
still, as a team, they've got Ohtani and Trout, and then there's a big drop off.
Well, and it was almost like clockwork that he was unreliable. I mean, that's the essence of Luis Garcia, was that he was unreliable. And if you're that unreliable of a reliever, then you're just not an effective reliever. I mean, that's the thing you have to be as really, like, look, you're going to be this kind of pitcher, then okay, then we're going to deploy you in this situation or give you less chances in this crucial situation. He just couldn't pick a way to be, and that made him even worse. I mean, unreliable. He's just an unreliable pitcher, and that's not the kind of guy you want coming in from the bullpen. And we won't have to see him come in from the bullpen anymore, and that's why I think swapping him out for an effective left-handed pitcher is a great move for the Phillies. So I'm gonna feel good about
there that. Were points last year. There were points last season when swapping him out with, you know, a broom with a hat and a jersey would have been acceptable.
You wouldn't have even needed the hat.
You could have walked in a run from literally not throwing a pitch, and then switched him out, and it would have ended better than, I'm going to say, probably at least 30, if not 60% of his outings.
Maybe like if there was like
a manatee wearing a hat. Try manatee.
Like an angry bee was on the pitcher's mound, and they didn't want it to hurt the pitcher who was out there, so they sent out Luis Garcia to kill it, and then they bring him out of the game after he's killed it. Like, that could have been a goal for him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, speaking of changes to the Phillies, we did want to talk tonight about some other more recent Phillies news, which certainly affects fans more so than anyone else, other than, you know, the actual people it involves. But that's the broadcast booth. News from the broadcast booth, Liz. As we all know, the past Phillies season was a clearly a test run of sorts for the Phillies in the radio broadcast.
A carousel of Kevins.
When they selected a smattering of Kevins from across Phillies lore and dropped them into the broadcast booth as Scott Fransky's partners throughout the season. And that was, of course, Kevin Jordan, Kevin Stocker, and Kevin Franson. And yes, I think anyone who knows how jobs worked was aware that they were trying out each of these guys, because the added subplot to that being that Larry Anderson has very clearly shown less interest in traveling with the team and being away from home. And you know, we all have fond memories of Larry Anderson's rascalliness in the radio broadcast booth. That is, of course, turned quite a bit more curmudgeonly in the past few seasons. And, you know, on the one hand, I don't really blame him, because he's watched some really not fun teams. and it's pulled him away from his family as his job, and he's just become a lot less he's really started harping on specific players and just being a lot less pleasant to listen to. So it was no surprise that he was like, look, I'm going to pull back. They said, okay, we're going to try out a couple of different guys to take your spot. And as we learned just today, the Phillies' new broadcast outlook will be Scott Fransky, of course, leading the radio broadcasts. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it'll be Kevin Franson for the road games for half, you know, for 81 games with Scott Fransky on the road. And surprisingly enough, Larry Anderson will be continuing in the booth for 81 games for the home games. So that kind of scratches the itch of Larry Anderson not wanting to travel. And it's the best Kevin of the bunch, I think, and I think most people think. Kevin Franson was the most fun to listen to, and sort of an antithesis to L.A. in that he was very excited to be in the booth, very excited to watch and broadcast the Phillies, regardless of how bad things got at certain points during the season. So, I think another good move for the Phillies. I was a little surprised that Larry Anderson was sticking around for 81 games. It seemed like a lot for a guy who was pulling away. But I don't know, Liz. I mean, well, what do you think about? Let's start with Kevin Franson. What do you think about their move to keep Kevin Franson on as a closer to full time radio broadcaster?
There's literally no other choice. I'm trying to remember because the other two Kevins, they blend together, and then I don't specifically remember them. Like, I don't even really know what either of them looks like, to be honest. Because I didn't watch. I think what is it, Kevin? Did they both? They were both Phillies at one point.
Yeah, man, you don't remember? We just did a whole podcast on the.
I know, and but here's the thing. It's Stalker. All right. I couldn't remember if it was Stalker or Jordan because they're both Kevins. I mean, come on. They're both Kevins. But yeah, I think it was Kevin. Yeah, Kevin Stalker was pretty decent, actually. He wasn't amazing, but he was excited. He sounded at times like a little kid. I didn't think he was bad. He was the middle Kevin and the round robin of Kevins. The round Kevins. Is that it? Round Kevin? Round robin? No, that's not how that works. I know that. But, you know, Kevin Jordan sounded like he was asleep. I remember the first road trip that they took where Kevin Jordan was on it. Fransky sounded like, I almost called him Kevin Fransky. That is not his name.
Just call him Kevin Fransky. And that's going to be a problem because as someone pointed out today, Scott Fransky, Larry Anderson, and Kevin Franson have last names that are a combination of the last two guys' names. And that's going to be a problem all season long.
This is going to be fun. But yeah, like the first road trip, Fransky's, he was almost like quietly appalled or like, is this really happening? Like that was the way he sounded that entire road trip because Kevin Jordan was just, and he'd done this before. He'd filled in for people before. I'm almost positive he in the past. And it just, it was like, yeah, is this guy a broadcaster? Is this really what it like? And I couldn't blame him. He sounded bored and sleepy and monotone the whole time. And then there's Kevin Franson, who was just, he was just constantly excited.
Oh, just like having Sonic the Hedgehog in the booth. That was,
yes.
It was good. You need, if honestly, a team like that should consider like getting a Kevin Franson and then just wearing them out as a broadcaster during a down season like that and bringing in a new guy at the start of the next season, just because of the emotional toll. Broadcasting a team that slowly takes itself out, slowly and heartbreakingly and crushingly takes itself out of a playoff race. That can have a lot of, you know, that can have an effect on you. That can make you not want to come into work. And I will say that every one of the Kevins, I think they all wanted to be there. So, and I know broadcasting is a thankless job. So, but I agree with you that Jordan and Stalker, they sort of both lacked the electricity that Franson kind of brought to the booth. And yeah, I don't know. I think we just need to find an over under on the first time somebody calls him Kevin Franderson, because it's going to happen at least double digit times during the season.
I feel like the first game.
Sure.
Either the first game of the season or the first game with Franson. I don't know if they start at home or on the road next year. They usually start on the road. But I can imagine, because it's the first game of the season and Francis is saying, you know, we've got Kevin Friends in here in the booth with us for the road games. And at home, we have Larry Franderson. I feel like if it happens, it happens early, because I can't imagine when he'd be saying both of their names like that. I feel like that's when it's most likely to happen.
And they do open at home on this season. They start March 28th against the Braves.
Really? It's been, I don't think they've actually opened at home. It's been a really long time, yeah, I think.
I think you're right. But yeah, that'll be a big change, right? A reasonable change this season. I think it's another great move for the system. Yeah, as far as Larry Anderson goes, I find myself missing the old Larry Anderson as if it was a different person. Yeah, like there was another guy there.
He's dead. He's gone. You know, like, this is the season for him to sort of, like, is him being kind of crotchety and curmudgeonly and, you know, really angry and slightly old school. Because Franzen has some old school, but he can really, he's so excited to watch these kids play because he's so close to his own playing days. Larry Anderson, this was the season for him to be like, all right, you know, getting into it. You know, these are better players and they're all excited to be here and they're all learning. And instead of sort of being like, all right, well, this is a learning experience for them, he was just actively angry that they weren't immediately great all the time. And it was so frustrating to hear, because it's blending just expectations that were way too high, which I'll admit, the expectations of, hey, maybe don't biff that ball for the eighth time, Scott Kingery. What is with the names on this team?
You are crushing this. Wow.
I'm done speaking now. I'm finished.
I'm like, yeah, there are a lot of similar names based on Liz's mystery tonight. Well, my theory is either that Larry Anderson, well, he either thinks that, and is probably right, that this team is about to acquire some serious talent and be a legitimate powerhouse and be a lot more fun to see. So he doesn't want to pull out completely in the same way that, you know, you work at Yahoo Sports, but still do this podcast. You don't want to not be a part of the Phillies completely, because I think they're on the verge of something. And also, you've been doing it for so long, you don't know, you know, if you can't imagine yourself without it. Excuse me if I'm making assumptions about you, but I'm 100% correct. I believe I'm 100% correct. It's either that or, you know, Larry Anderson got in deep with like a Jimmy Buffett themed casino or like a rednecks casino. I can see either thing. And, you know, some backwoods dice game. And, you know, he really needs the money this season to, you know, pay off some of his debtors. And they're giving him one last baseball season to broadcast his way out of debt. I have to go write a screenplay. We will be right back after this.
Like, I expected him to come back. You know, he, now that he doesn't have to travel, I think that's the thing. I think he's fine. As long as he could come to work, you know, for, you know, half the time out of 6 months and, you know, drive from his house and get to go back to his house, I think that's all he really wants. And so I think he'll be around for at least a few more years. I mean, he's not all that old. How old is Larry Anderson?
I don't know, he's in his 60s, I think.
I mean, I guess if he could retire, maybe.
He's 65.
He's 65. You know, he's, you know, 4 or 5 years older than my dad, who won't be able to retire for quite a while. You know, like, this isn't now that he's not traveling, it's not the most intensive work. He's got that pool he never shuts up about.
I was just going to say, if they let Larry Anderson work from home, I think they should just give that a shot. Just let him put the game on his TV and just like hook a laptop up for him, just to see if his temperament improves at all. just to see what it's like. I don't know. I think that Larry Anderson is in there somewhere, and I think meeting him on every contractual demand he would have in a fantasy world might just bring it back out. So I don't know. Let him broadcast looking on his phone while floating on an inflatable cushion in his pool, and just see what happens with a team that has, you know, Bryce Harper on it. Let's see if that makes Larry Anderson more of the old Larry Anderson we knew and loved. But in any case, I think again, a great move for the Phillies. Kevin Franzen will be great in the booth, And you know, I'm never unhappy to learn. I know this isn't everyone's opinion, but I'm never unhappy to learn that Larry Anderson isn't gone. That would be sad for me, because I know, again, he's changed. His tone has changed towards the Phillies and gotten a little more grating and a little more grumpy over the years. But, you know, he was my favorite broadcaster for so long that, you know, I would be sad to see him go completely. So I'm cool with this new setup. And yeah, and I'm happy with the wave of the future coming in. So speaking of the future, Liz, there has been quite a bit of talk this week with the Phillies. Obviously, the Phillies making a few moves, but they weren't the only ones. And, you know, the teams that happen to be making the most moves right now are all in the same division, and they happen to be the Phillies division. And, you know, we don't have to do the umpteenth coverage of the NL East is looking pretty crazy right now that we've seen this week, because that was the story of the day there for a little while, with the Braves making their moves for Donaldson and McCann, the Mets making the trade for Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz, the Nationals signing Patrick Corbin, and the Phillies trading for Gene Segura. But I mean, as far as the new NL East goes, I just wanted to get your take. Like, how do you like it? Who are you scared of? Are you more scared of any of these teams now than you were before any of those deals I just mentioned went through?
I'm still as scared of all of them as I was before. I'm probably more scared of the Mets, because I wasn't fearful of the Mets. I was fearful in that I knew that they were going to be the worst team, but always beat us anyway. Because that's how it's been for the past few years. The Mets have sucked, and they've beaten the crap out of the Phillies. Now they're going to actually be better. And so they're closer to the level of the others. But I don't know if there's, you know, between the Braves and the Nationals, at least, if there's one that I fear more than the other. They're both really good. You know, we look at them losing Bryce Harper. They've got Juan Soto just there. Like, yeah, they could have both, but, you know, they also have other great pieces. Like, they're a fearsome team. You know, the Braves, I don't know, Donaldson doesn't really do it for me. I have to see if he's going to be better than he was this year, less injured, and find who he was, because he's getting a little older. This doesn't mean he still can't hit, but I kind of want to see it. You know, they haven't made as many moves that have frightened me, but they also have a better team to begin with.
I have this feeling, and I don't know if you're going to meet me at this point or not, but first of all, I think we're about to see a new age for the NL East. I think it's been really tepid for a couple of years now. Like, granted, the Phillies and Mets kind of went at it for two seasons a little bit ago, but then the Phillies kind of took over, and it wasn't especially close. And before that, it was, you know, Braves time for a decade and a half. And after that, the Nationals pretty much just ran the table without much of a challenge. I know the Braves last year changed that a little bit, but people considered, you know, the Nationals made a final. Like, everyone was waiting for the Nationals to make their move. They didn't, but it was still expected, the Nationals. And here we are, the Nationals having missed the playoffs, and we're still thinking of them as a dangerous team, a team that could definitely beat you and isn't finished because they're going out of their way to sign free agent pitchers that, you know, the Phillies and other teams were trying to sign as well. So I think there's going to be a new tone to this division. I think we've so often felt like it was the worst, or just like sloppiest, laziest, crappiest division. And I think those days might be over, which is kind of exciting, honestly, just to have a new version of that happening during the baseball season. But I also kind of have, I think that Brody Van Wagenen is going to change things in the NL East. Maybe not single-handedly, but I don't know. I'm kind of into the pedal to the metal sort of philosophy he's got. And I don't know. I don't want to just like let this bleed into too many of the other things I'm going to try to bring up here tonight on this episode. But he has this quote that I saw that he made on SNY that he criticized Mets teams of the recent past, saying, quote, "If player X and player Y and player Z does well, we'll be okay." But Van Wagenen said he wants to eliminate those ifs. Like, that was their plan going into the season. Like, well, you know, we have these three or four guys in key spots and they could be good, but we don't really know if they will be. It's like how you used to go into like exams when you were in high school and just think like, yeah, you know, I know the answers to most of these. I'll just get that one wrong, or like, I'll just give that one my best guess. And more often than not, that plan was not a great one. And the Mets have learned that same lesson, I think, repeatedly. And that he was addressing that kind of openly made me think like, oh, okay. So he's like aware of that. But also just this idea that, I don't know, the move he made to acquire Cano and Diaz, it feels like his idea is, yeah, let's like whatever players that we can like grab at, the best versions of all of those players, let's get them in here. So like next year, we give ourselves the best chance at making the playoffs. Beyond next year, no promises whatsoever. You know, that the future doesn't exist for us. But this sort of like play for today kind of thing is, I mean, it's the kind of team that really messes your shit up. Like, it's the kind of team that can step in and all these other teams that are sitting around trying to make the smartest move in the room and like outthink each other, not just now, but 5 years into the future. You know, it doesn't mean he necessarily is setting his team up to be better, but sort of like a wrecking ball that swings into a playoff race all of the sudden. And I kind of love it, but that's also the offseason version of me. The idea of it is cool to me, but knowing it's the Mets really pisses me off. So I don't know. Do you think somebody who wrestles control of a franchise like that has the opportunity to change the outlook of an entire division, or am I over dramatic? Like, am I being too dramatic about this?
I mean, he's made it a 4-team race now. Like, the Mets were going to be like probably middling, or no, probably the lower end of middling without any moves, without anything major. And he came in and actually did something. He actually did, like, yeah. If the Mets actually sign any players that have money attached to them, like serious money, I'll be shocked. I don't think I've heard them connected to any major player beyond just a whisper, like beyond just, you know, they are in this group of players that are also known to be, you know, contacting, you know, possibly a player's agent, maybe. So I don't think they're going to spend a lot of money, but that doesn't mean they won't trade, which is at least something. Like, the Mets have been such a sad shell of a team, like just sort of they're just like all giant paper cutouts, you know, giant cardboard standees that they were moved around for most of the season. It's like there's barely a baseball team there because they care, because the, you know, the ownership is so terrible and the front office is just mixed up. They have like, it's not even all that better now. Brody Van Wagenen has like 6 AGMs or something like that. There's a lot of layers there, and we'll see how quickly, because we're not going to really see how that works in motion until the season starts. That could be where the Metsiness of all of this comes in.
It's pretty telling that you used the image sad shell of a team to describe them, because that's exactly what I'm trying to describe them as, but I guess as more of a happy shell of a team now. Like, the shell part is still there, except now they're trying to make the paper facades good players instead of bad ones. At the end of the season, it all gets torn down and they start over and grab at whatever the most talented players are that are nearby again. But it's just that the difference is that they're going for the most talented and not just the nearest. That's how I'm envisioning this, and that we're both describing them the same way. It's pretty telling of the flaw, I guess, in the Mets, in the Brody Van Wagenen philosophy, I suppose. But I don't know.
It's a philosophy. It's something to do. They've just been flailing. They've just been flailing out there. Like, they stumbled into something good in 2015 when everything was working the way it should. And they are just like, they were not prepared. You know, they's like, this is what we've always wanted. Like, but it was a total accident. They didn't know how to make anything happen, you know, because they weren't prepared and they weren't trying to do it. When it was over, they were just like looking at each other like, what is it? Do we keep this guy here? What do we do? Do we bring Jay Bruce back and then trade him and then bring him back again? Because that's what they ended up doing. And then they traded him.
I guess we will.
But it's something. They're doing something. Whether it works remains to be seen. But they're, so many teams are happy to do nothing and to trade big players for a bunch of pieces that no one's going to see. At the very least, Brody Van Wagenen facilitated a trade for two players that are going to be on the Mets next year. Mm-hmm. That have a chance to make an actual difference in games next year. Teams aren't doing that. Like, the Cardinals traded for a year of Paul Goldschmidt recently. And I was like, wow, I guess that's exactly what you do when you have a bunch of half decent pieces and they need, you know, you need just something to get you over the hill. Like, it's good to see teams doing things.
Right.
I know that sounds odd. It's just like doing things to actively make their team right now better.
And that's the appeal, I think, because there's been a lot of lamenting about the AL Central, in which it seems like the Indians feel like they can, you know, instead of being this fun, powerful, good team, they're willing to sell off key pieces because they don't have to be that good to win that division. And they don't have to be that good means they don't have to spend as much money. And it's really shameful to
fuck them. Shameful, whatever is the strongest word you could use, because fuck them. That is so infuriating. You know, and then they're going to try to inflict Trevor Bauer on another team. Why?
That's the cruelest part, frankly. That's awful. Oh, God.
Quarantine him in Cleveland. Just leave him there. It's what he deserves.
I hear Cleveland
is a very nice town. I'm sorry.
We're not insulting Cleveland here. We're just, unfortunately, that's where he is, and we want him to stay where he is. So, you know, sorry, Cleveland, you're taking it on the chin on this one, unfortunately.
They're going to try. I mean, I guarantee if they say that they want to trade those two after giving Carlos Carrasco an extension that I'm not sure why he signed, considering I think he could have gotten a whole lot more. Like, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing other than actively trying to lose and make the Twins look really good, I guess, or whoever might be second place. Like, the Tigers could accidentally fall into doing halfway decent this season. Not the Royals, but definitely the Tigers could fall into that.
What if the White Sox land Bryce Harper like they want to?
The White Sox. I don't know why I keep forgetting that they exist.
Because you can't remember.
One of my good friends at work is a White Sox fan.
It is actually impossible to remember all five AL Central teams in one sitting. You can't do it. You can't.
No,
it's impossible.
You
will
all
forget one of them.
Like, some of them are, they're just like a beige baseball lump.
Yeah, no, it's never the White Sox, because I always think I'm going to forget the White Sox, so I remember them first, and then I forget the Tigers, or I forget the Twins. I'm already forgetting another one.
The
Royals and the Indians. All right, so that doesn't count because we were just talking about them, but you forgot the White Sox while we were talking about them, so it does count.
Yes,
but
I did.
It is actually impossible to remember all five of them, just for the record.
I kind of love that the White Sox are like at least publicly saying, let's go and act like we're going to get Bryce Harper. I mean, they seem serious about it. It's hard to tell. Like, I don't know why they would, you know, I guess it's good optics to look like you're interested at the very least. Who knows how serious they are about it, but it's interesting that they're involved. You know, he's such a good player that even teams that have absolutely no chance of winning in the next few years are really into it.
Yeah.
Man, that's a terrible division.
I agree. But yeah, that's unfortunately right now, until that happens, they are the textbook definition of the least exciting division. You know, it's just the wrong place to be right now. And unfortunately, there's fans of those teams who have to put up with it. The other last thing I want to talk about with the NL East is that it's not just the acquisition of players that's made it interesting. It's the conniving sort of way that things have gone down around there. I mean, you have the Nationals sweeping in at the last second, and, you know, Corbin was, it was pretty much down to, we were all pretty 80% sure he was going to the Yankees. The Phillies were kind of in there because they were like, we have a ton of money and we will not be outbid. And then the Nationals were just kind of like, oh, then the Nationals are also in it. And they came in and snagged him at the kind of the last minute. Then you have the Rick Kranitz, the Phillies pitching coach, going to the Braves. He's going to the Braves because the Braves asked the Phillies about assistant pitching coach Chris Young, who the Phillies didn't want to give up. So they made him their pitching coach and ejected Rick Kranitz. And when Rick Kranitz became available, the Braves took Rick Kranitz as their pitching coach, which makes you wonder what their original plan had been all along.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was that. Because that's brilliant to play on the Phillies' insecurities. You do what you got to do. And people credit Rick Kranitz for helping guys like Aaron Nola. I remember him as the sensitivity bus guy. And I also never know how important some of these dudes are. Like, hitting coaches are completely interchangeable. I don't understand why pitching coaches aren't really the same. Though this season, it seems to be maybe they are.
And then, to the Phillies' credit, our own John Stolness mentioned that, the Phillies showed interest in Edwin Diaz, and the Mets gave up two of their best prospects to, acquire Edwin Diaz, knowing the Phillies would get him if they didn't. That one might be a little bit more of a stretch, but at the same time, I'll buy it. This is like soap opera jailhouse, stuff out here right now. So, I'll buy it.
It's interesting and cool. Like, so many of these teams have been doing nothing for a number of years. Like, even the Nationals, they signed Scherzer and they signed Strasburg to that big contract. But, it's an active competition. Four of the five teams in the NL East desperately want to be better than every other team. All of them want a piece of first place. I love it. It's going to bother the hell out of me once we get to the season, of course. But right now, it's so cool that we know it's going to be a fight. It's going to be a fight to the end, and every game's going to be interesting. And I mean, tell me that this isn't one of the most interesting divisions in baseball, with the Diamondbacks blowing things up for some reason. I guess not blowing things up, considering they were going to lose Paul Goldschmidt in a year anyway. But, the Diamondbacks seem like they're giving up just a little bit. So how is the NL East not the most interesting division in baseball right now?
It is. And like you said, four-team race at the moment. The four teams that are at least interested in being a part of the race. And that leaves a fifth team, which I wanted to talk about. Liz, what would you say if I asked you...
You can't even start to talk about it.
Say if I asked you the question, what are the Marlins doing right now? Because the answer is, they got new uniforms. They tore down the home run sculpture. They signed a couple of guys to minor league contracts. Pedro Alvarez, Dixon Machado, Devin Marrero. They announced their coaching staff. And they make headlines because they have JT Realmuto and other teams want him. But other than that, what is the most recent Marlins news? Because I mean, look, if you looked at this as more than just nothing, I guess you could make the argument that if a team said they were rebuilding, long term, entire, comprehensive, up down rebuilding, this is really, phase 0.0, new uniforms and changing the physicality of the stadium they play in. I mean, you could do those things and do other things, but is that giving them too much credit? Because I think that it is.
I have thought for a long time that they're not going to be serious about doing anything for 5 years, regardless of what happens to the prospects, because they are up to their eyeballs in debt. The team that bought them, the group that bought them, no matter what Major League Baseball says, they're comfortable. We're comfortable with the amount of debt. Major League Baseball doesn't have to reveal the terms of anything to anybody, so they can say whatever they want. The Marlins group is up to their eyeballs in debt, which is one of the reasons why they unloaded Giancarlo Stanton immediately. And with so much of the, I think a decent amount of the contract is being paid by the Yankees. So it's really all about money. They're not going to do anything that involves money, which is one of the reasons why they've been embarrassingly lowballing JT Realmuto on extension offers, because they have no intention on actually extending him. They're making him, frankly, insultingly small offers, and then not seeming too keen on trading him. And to me, it feels like they're doing it out of spite, because he's very obviously wants to leave. His agent has told them to trade him. He's miserable. He's too good to be on this team. And so now I feel like they're not trading him out of spite because he wants to leave so badly, which is terrible. He's got 2 years of control left. They need to let him go. Someone has to offer them so much that they just can't turn it down, because the poor man needs to escape. Freedom for JT Realmuto.
How do they have the energy to be spiteful? Is my question. Like, how?
What else are they doing?
Do they feel anything at this point in Marlins history? There's just nothing there. Like, you have this
character. I mean, they must consider embarrassing to them that he's like, get me out of here. Unlike, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, who was pretty much like, yeah, I'm done with this. I don't want anything to do with this Jeter ownership group. I'll go to the Yankees, where Jeter is a legend, instead.
Yeah, I feel like they were like players tweeting openly after the Giancarlo Stanton deal went down and it became clear that they were just going to pull the copper wiring out of the walls. And look, they got rid of Yelich, and he became the NL MVP. Stan went to the Yankees and they went to the playoffs.
Ozuna
went to the Cardinals. I mean, you know, there were some really fun players down there, and they're all gone. And now it's just Realmuto, and everybody wants him because everybody wants this fantastic catcher with 2 years of control. And now he's just stuck in this situation. And like, why torture him? Why do that? I mean, is it just like they're bored, so they're just plucking all the legs off a butterfly, like a kid who's going to grow up to be a serial killer? It sucks for him, and he could look so much better and make another team so much better and be so much like be a part of like a fun Major League Baseball situation, and the Marlins just aren't that. They are a soggy, crappy mess. I mean, you got rid of the sculpture. Why? It's like they're purposefully trying to just suck all the color out of the Marlins and just have them be this bland, flopping mess of a team. It's so...
I mean, they turned the statue, the sculpture area, into standing room only, which,
yeah,
man, they totally do not need.
Yeah, going to get a lot of use out of that. Yeah, absolutely. Good thinking, yeah. Guys.
I mean, I really do think it's spite. I think it's spite combined with not really knowing what they're doing. Because I would imagine that the offers from Realmuto were pretty substantial at the trade deadline. I would imagine they're a little less so now. But I mean, we'll see what happens next week. I just don't feel like they really feel compelled to trade him at all. I mean, they don't have to, but it would be nice to not make players hate the teams that they play
for.
That
would be nice.
You know, one thing that I think is going to be talked about, it's going to be a sticking point in the next CBA, is, all right, well, you want to pay older players less, then you need to give us a chance to hit free agency earlier. You know, in a few years, this might not be a problem for guys like JT Realmuto if they have a few years less of team control, so they can hit, you know, the free agent market, you know, in 4 years rather than six. That would be such a small incremental and almost borderline useless change as opposed to what it should be. But I mean, teams can do this. I mean, they have known that they don't have to trade him. They can keep him and keep him miserable. I just don't know why you do that. You know, I mean, my theory is if they don't trade him next week at the meetings, they won't trade him till the deadline. They won't trade him till the deadline or until a catcher on a contending team gets hurt.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because obviously we wanted to talk about that as well. Next week, I mean, if you thought this week was fun or crazy or manic, you are about to experience presumably that on all the knobs cranked up a little higher. This is, you know, the MLB winter meetings in Las Vegas are going to start next week, and that is obviously the time of year when a ton of deals go down, when GMs are shaking each other's hands and playing high stakes poker and going street racing and jumping into
strippers,
swimming pools from the tops of hotels.
I'm imagining a bunch of GMs like with, you know, Jerry DePoto and Ruben Amaro Jr. at, you know, at their heads, like former GMs, you know, dragging Brody Van Wagenen out to like 8 strip clubs in a night. Like, this is your baptism.
Ignoring calls from their wives, you know, all the wacky, crazy stuff you imagine GMs getting up to at this event. Certainly not just like having a quiet continental breakfast while checking their phones. I'm sure that's not exactly what's going on. But no, I mean, Liz, you know, obviously we can't stop talking about what a crazy, huge offseason this is for the Phillies. Even before anything's happened, they acquired Gene Segura, and that was a huge deal and a great trade made by the Phillies. We're obviously all expecting big things with the winter meetings taking place in Bryce Harper's hometown of Las Vegas. How much of all of it is about to happen?
I think a decent amount. I think we've seen, I think, more action now, at least with trades. There have been very few signings. I think it's been like 2 catchers and like a hand, maybe a reliever or 2 or something. It's mostly been trades. And this is, I think, where the signings are going to happen, where all the GMs are close together and there has to be, you know, the back and forths won't be so long. You know, teams are going to submit their offers. I think I've said previously, I thought that Harper would sign this week. I think he will probably sign before the end of December. That's my thought, unless he wants to like think about it over the holidays. But, you know, I hope he signs by the end of December. And like the winter meetings is what's going to kick off the extravaganza. Like everyone's out of, you know, Manny Machado is out of damage control mode. You know, Bryce Harper has, you know, is ready to go. He's presumably buttoned his shirt up to the very top button while going to, what was it, a Nelly concert last week? Embarrassing.
Yeah.
Not Nelly, like the white dude standing next to him. But yeah, like this is when the extravaganza starts. This is when this is when everyone remembers the other free agents that are also on the market, which I don't even remember at this point.
Adam Jones is on the market. He's one of those. Yeah. Remember that?
He's great.
No, I agree. I think this is the time when most people will remember that the free agent market is comprised of more than just Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, because it is less exciting than it was 4 years ago when we saw this free agent class coming. It is. But there are still big names that can help teams that will, you know, watching guys like Adam Jones kind of like get that mid-afternoon deal that you just see out of the corner of your eye is like, you know, that stops you for a second to be like, oh wait, what, Adam Jones signed? Like somebody on that level who is not like the game changer anymore, but you know, catches your eye. Those are the kind of deals that like you get an hour where they're just flying fast and loose, where all the dominoes fall into place and suddenly over the course of an afternoon, everybody makes their deals. So that's what we're all looking forward to. And I agree. I mean, it would be crazy, I think, if the Phillies come out of this, you know, maybe not without their big, you know, the big thing happening, but without making like a couple of deals, like at least without there being more different Phillies by the end of the winter meetings will be pretty surprising to me. So the other thing I wanted to talk about was in relation to the winter meetings was, and you kind of alluded to this in the fact that Machado walked back his hustle comments and everybody's just trying to be on their best behavior. Something I saw tweeted today was Ken Rosenthal tweeted Michael Brantley was also trying to make himself more appealing. Now, the other day, you and I were talking in our Slack channel, and I used the phrase statistical revolution, and I wanted to apologize for that because I've hated it and been unable to stop thinking about using such a lame phrase ever since I used it. And I'm going to – this relates back to my original point. No, I'll explain why, but – In my head, it's also just the wrong thing to describe the word revolution. It just, because baseball doesn't have revolutions. It just has times when different things, different statistics are valued more than others, and then it sort of swings back to another set of statistics and values those more than others. And I think now the thing that is valued more than anything for a lot of teams, or for some teams, some of which have the money that players want, is versatility. And that wasn't always what everybody wanted. You know, at one point people just wanted dingers. At one point people wanted guys who could get on base and get walked a lot. And now I think versatility is really making its way into some front offices' priorities. So Ken Rosenthal tweeted about Michael Brantley today that Brantley made it clear he was willing to play first base. Now, according to the Rosenthal tweet, he's played first base before. But he's played first base before in the minor leagues 10 years ago. So it's like reaching back on your resume and saying like, yeah, I've worked in television. I mean, you know, I was an intern on a local news program 15 years ago, but like I have experience in television. But it's all, you know, you're only ever doing that because you're making yourself look, you know, more appealing for potential employers. So I don't know. I mean, is that kind of where we're at, where a lot of players who are like making those specifications just in case, you know, Gabe Kapler's listening and he's like, you know what? I could really see Brantley. Let's acquire Brantley, but I want him at first base.
I think players are doing this in response to getting poor offers. Brantley would have signed by now because he has, I think, more than the Phillies. I know the Phillies offered him. I think at least one other team has as well. If he'd gotten an offer he'd liked, he'd be signed with them right now just to be an outfielder. He obviously hasn't gotten anything he's liked. And so I think part of this positional flexibility thing is it's a market response from players who are desperately trying to figure out how to make teams give them more money, you know, get them to give them what they think that they deserve. As a player, like if Brantley's not getting deals that he thinks are good, like either his expectations are out of whack or player or teams are radically undervaluing him, you know, but like this positional flexibility thing is also, it also feels like income suppression in a way. Cause how many dudes can play these multiple positions? And the ones that can are usually journeymen who you're not going to pay a lot anyway. Like dudes right. Who can play, you know, Pedro Florimon, who could technically play like four positions. Kevin Franzen was one of those dudes. Kevin Franzen played, you know, a handful of positions. So I think they had him in the outfield. He was over at third, you know, and it feels like, you know, teams want this of their players to say, well, then this is how you can, you know, we'll pay you more if you do this. And so it makes single position players look weak for some reason when it's baffling. That, like, I get why teams want this. I get why they want positional flexibility. But it's starting to seem like that is what they prioritize in all of their players, which is just not how players train in baseball. Like, they're asking for things of these players that they have not prepared for. Like, Manny Machado can play two positions. It's great. Bryce Harper's an outfielder. You could probably put him at a different position, but he's a right fielder. Like, I don't understand. Like, are they trying to tell us now that players like Bryce Harper aren't valuable enough because they don't play more than one position? I don't get this. I mean, I do, but it's really disturbing.
I think I don't think it's like a universal philosophy yet, but I do think, yeah, that is what they want. And like you said, the fact of the matter is Ben Zobrists are pretty uncommon and they're really only at the peak of their powers for a couple of years, because then it starts like, oh, okay. Yeah. He's still listed as a center fielder, but he hasn't had the speed of a center fielder in a year and a half. And he doesn't have the arm strength to throw from the outfield that he used to have. So he's, you know, it's like, was it Shane Victorino that used to be like, oh, he's a switch hitter, but he hit like shit from one side of the plate. So it basically was like he was not a switch hitter, but it said he was on his baseball card. So the Phillies have another switch hitter. And you can try to force that, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're lying on your resume, people are going to find out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's kind of where we're at with that, I think. And, I don't know. I mean, the Phillies are one of those teams who want guys who play a bunch of different positions, obviously. But now we're entering this free agent market where where a couple of good players, two particular good players, are available who are just massively talented. superstars who, you know, don't play much more than the one position they do play. Obviously, Machado just wants to play. I keep screwing this up. He wants to play shortstop. Yes. Okay. I don't know why that's so hard for me to remember that he wants to play shortstop. He does not want to play third base. Yes. And, you know, the Phillies did this thing this year where they were quite dramatically a team that sort of didn't believe in positions, barring some exceptions, but they weren't afraid to play Carlos Santana at first base or third base, or Reese Hoskins in the outfield or first base, or Scott Kingery at shortstop all season long. You know, the same position, but not the one he was developed to play. So do you feel like in 2018, the Phillies did a season, you know, quote unquote, their way, whether that way was spurred on by the front office, by Matt Klentak, or by Gabe Kapler, or by both, because they both bought into the idea that, like, look, we just want this deep pool of players who we can choose from to create matchups in the game. And that's going to put a dent in playing time. That's going to change the way that a baseball team comes together. Do you think they were given this one season to like try it their way and to see how it goes? And then after that season ended as dramatically awfully as it could have, like if they had lost the same number of games, but over the course of the season and not in the final 2 months, you know, probably a different outlook, but it happened the way it did with players available who are like generationally talented who aren't playing more than one position. Do you think that philosophy is a little more out the window? Like, not totally, but do you think they're like, okay, but we will acquire Bryce Harper and we're not going to ask him to play first base like we kind of sort of want to?
I think they're mostly done with it. I think they have to be. They acquired Gene Segura. Where are they putting him? If not at shortstop, where are they putting him? Has he played a lot of second base?
He played second base a lot in Arizona in 2016. And Mike Farron on Hitting Season, the latest episode of Hitting Season, said that he actually felt like he was a better second baseman than he was a shortstop, which immediately inserted a little concern worm into my heart where I was like, oh no. Like the Phillies have said he is our shortstop, but, you know, on the other hand, it exists that he's like, you know, just a middle infielder and doesn't have a position and will force Scott Kingery to play shortstop at some point in some, you know, roundabout
way. But why? That's I guess maybe roundabout way, but like now they have a dude that plays, they have two dudes that play second. They have a dude that plays shortstop in second. And then they have Michael Franco at third. Like everyone keeps saying that they think Michael Franco is gone, at least in our Slack room on The Good Fight. They're convinced that Michael Franco is gone. I'm not, because who are they sending him away for, and who or what are they getting to play third base? They're not. Gene Segura is not doing it. Scott Kingery is not doing it. There's no more Carlos Santana. Reese Hoskins is certainly not doing it, and they don't have any dude in the outfield who could even come close to doing it. There's no more Pedro Florimon either. This is their option. Like Cesar Hernandez is now the odd man out. He's the man without a position. Unless they want to somehow make Scott Kingery trade off with him, which is dumb.
No.
Either Cesar becomes a bench player or they send him away. Like, this is what they've done to themselves. There is no more room for this positional flexibility bullshit, which I don't think it's invaluable. I just think it's impractical with the team that they have. Like, they tried to force it. They tried to fit these square pegs in round holes last year. And I give him some credit for trying. And I give Middleton credit for letting them do it. They just said, let's see if this works. Do we have the pieces to make it work? You know, can we move these guys out and around before, you know, the players that we want come on the free agent market? Can we make it work? And they couldn't. And I like that they've acquired a mostly dedicated positional dude and, you know, said we're moving Reese Hoskins to first base, you know, and they've made these commitments. They just haven't taken it all the way yet. And I'm trying to see how they're going to do it because they have to now. They don't really have a choice.
Let me ask you this, because I you kind of mentioned this and I think you might be right. So I wouldn't be upset if Michael Franco was the third baseman for the Phillies this year.
Me either.
Because looking at the scenario you just painted, it's either going to be Michael Franco or they manage to convince Manny Machado to play third base. After that, you know, what's the plan? After that, your option is what?
They have to acquire a whole other Moustakas, human being.
Mike Moustakas, you know, Chase Headley. There's, you know, not a huge market right there. So you're right. It's either – it's going to be one of those two guys. And putting it that way makes it seem to me far more likely that it's going to be Franco than Machado. Unless they can offer him a ton of money to play a position he's publicly said he doesn't want to play anymore. You know, I think they're capable of that. But it just seems more likely to me every day that they sign Bryce Harper and – if it's between a guy they already have or a guy they have to convince, you know, a pretty finicky, moody guy who they have to convince to play the position they want him to play for a, you know, a full season, I think that's probably going to be Franco. And yeah. So
I'm definitely okay with it being Franco. Like, I've made my peace with this a while ago because there's just, who else are they putting there? Who else are they putting there? You know, they're like, I think that they've made their peace with Machado. I think they've made their peace with J.P. Crawford far before. They were, you know, they Franco got hurt, given his body to the game, and he didn't really play for the rest of the year after he, you know, tumbled over that the dugout railing there. I think they would have we would have seen him more. You know, he really had a great upward tick near the end of the season, and I think this is just who he is. He's a really just deeply streaky player. And I think they keep him, you know, barring Machado or, you know, barring another option coming up. I don't think they're, you know, completely married to him. I think if a better guy came along, they would certainly grab him. But I don't think he's a bad plan for now. Like, the Phillies won a World Series with Pedro Feliz, who was not bad, but he wasn't a superstar. He's Pedro Feliz. So, you know, you don't need a superstar at every position. You just need a superstar at a few, and the rest of the dudes have to just be competent.
And you know what else? Mikel Franco could still be a superstar. Like, I'm not saying that's what the Phillies would be thinking by having, like, oh, we can't give him up. He's still potentially a superstar. I'm not sure they're still thinking that way about him. But whether or not that's the plan, he still could be. I'm not super confident that he could be, but last year was his best season as a baseball player in the major leagues, and to get to see where that goes, you know, it's the journey we're never going to see J.P. Crawford make. And Mikel Franco put together a far more promising season than J.P. Crawford. So,
oh, J.P. what could have been? He's just so cute too. He's got all those huskies. Like, he'll. I think it's a good move for him. The Phillies were clearly done. I don't mean to bring it back to J.P. Crawford. I just, you know, he was my favorite for a long time. And I, you know, I'm excited for him to get a real chance to have his service time manipulated by Seattle and then for him to have a starting job.
We can certainly end on J.P. I think, we'll all miss J.P. We'll miss his Instagram account, which we're acting like we can't see it anymore just because he plays for a different team. But no, we're
he's not ours anymore.
We wish the best of luck to J.P. Crawford. Hell, you know, we wish the best of luck to Carlos Santana and Luis Garcia as well. Just everybody.
Yeah, Carlos Santana had a really lovely goodbye note that was released by the Phillies. I think it was today. Oh, that's nice. Maybe it was yesterday, but it was very nice. He's like, the fans embraced me. Oh, God, for most of the season.
Good thing he's not on our block.
It was just very. it was just very sweet and genuine. You know, I think he sort of felt like. Yeah, you would imagine that he sort of felt like he knew things didn't quite work out the way they were supposed to. And I hope he knows it wasn't really his fault. I think even if he had been better, if he hadn't had such an enormous slump to start the season, even if he'd been better, I think we'd still be here.
No, I think so too. I think nobody embodies the misfire that the Phillies' plans this season underwent than Carlos Santana. Like, he's the type of player they wanted everywhere, and now they realize, no, we actually need a couple of Seguras in there to knock the base runners in. So Yes. Best of luck to the traded guys that have already left town. And more so, let's get excited about the winter meetings that this coming week, because it's going to be wild. Folks, stay tuned to the Good Fight. In the next week, it's going to be hopefully a roller coaster of emotion, and you can find plenty of coverage and thoughts and analysis on the Good Fight, where we will be covering every move the Phillies make. And also subscribe and download and give us, you know, wonderful 5-star ratings we most certainly deserve with the Good Fight podcast family, including Hidden Season with John Stolness, myself, Justin Clue, and Liz Rocher, as well as the midweek Hidden Season John does, usually with a baseball insider. Continued Success with me and Liz, of course, that you just listened to, and The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk, where we talk about the most absurd, ridiculous, or forgotten innings in Phillies history. We actually have a new episode up right now that is about the best innings Bryce Harper and Manny Machado have had against the Phillies before both of them potentially become Phillies. So give that a listen. Give us your downloads. And if you feel like it, give us $5 and join our Patreon, where you can get access to all kinds of bonus content courtesy of John Stolness, Liz, and myself. So stay tuned to that. Stay on the Good Fight and stay with us as we undergo the final part of the beginning of the middle part of the Phillies offseason. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation. And I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.